Welcome to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. This podcast is for those who are committed to thriving no matter where they are in that journey. And I say journey because thriving is not about achievement. It is not a destination. It is about engagement. When we feel energized by our life and we feel at our very best. My name is Bobby Kaler and I'm your host. And I'm so excited to be on this journey with you. I mentioned that it's a journey and you might find yourself anywhere along that path. You may be starting out. You may be moving up within an organization. You might be an entrepreneur, a business owner, a salesperson, or self-employed. Or you just might be that person who feels like there's something calling to you and it's time for a change. My mission is to provide stories that inspire us so that when the specter of doubt darkens our doorway, and it always shows up at the absolute worst time, we will choose to persist. I will also provide practical skills, perspectives, and ideas that will help us create the habits of thriving and flourishing. This is about providing hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. Let's get right to today's episode. My guest today is the very definition of a go-getter. When I listen to everything that she does, I think to myself, she just must have more hours in the day than the rest of us. She is one of those people that when she sees a need, she immediately asks herself, what can I do to help? When you add that to her inspiring story of being a two-time breast cancer survivor, a mom to three beautiful children, including a boy who is legally blind, and she has a full-time job as the VP of marketing at Viridian Credit Union, you just have to ask yourself, is there truly nothing this woman can't do? Her name is Sarah Corkery, and I cannot wait for you to meet her. Hey, Sarah, thanks for joining me.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You have one of the most amazing can-do spirits that I've ever encountered. I mean, when I got off the phone with you the other day, I was just like, I could conquer the world right now. It was amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Well, you're welcome. And thanks for sharing it with me. Yeah. Can you tell us a little about your journey?
Yeah. Yes. I'm a 44-year-old woman and I've had quite a journey so far in life. And I've had a lot of ups and a lot of downs, and who knows what'll come next, but I'm sure we'll get through it. So a big part of my life was when I was young, when I was 14, my mom passed away of uterine cancer and she was 46 and I thought she was so old, right? Obviously she was not as I approached nearing that age. And that did shape me a lot. And her mother had breast cancer and her sister had breast cancer in their late 30s, early 40s. So clearly we have some sort of family gene that's causing female-related cancers to happen. So I've been tested for a lot of different genetic disorders and they've all come back negative. But I was fortunate to get into a high-risk clinic at a university. And on my third visit there, they found a stage 0 breast cancer. So it is cancer, but it's in its earliest form. It's still within a breast duct, is not considered invasive. Luckily, I called it my golden ticket because then I could get a double mastectomy. So I wanted to just get rid of those. They're not needed any longer. So we did that. It was a very painful surgery. But we came through it okay. And they told me there was like less than 5% chance it would ever return and there was no further treatment needed, no chemo, no radiation. So on with life I went. So that was good. Then unfortunately, 4 years later, I was at a work planning session and felt a lump under my armpit and it turned out to be a stage 1 breast cancer that came back. Essentially, they had missed some precancerous cells during that surgery. So very disappointing. Very scary. My first thought was I better start writing letters to my children for when they graduate and get married, and because I probably won't be around. Luckily, I did have a lumpectomy, and then I had much further treatment. I had a chemo and radiation and the whole yard. It was very, very challenging. But that's been almost 4 years ago, so we are feeling like hopefully that's behind us. We also have a child with special needs. My son Jude was born in typically, and around 6 months old, we noticed his eyes were wiggling back and forth. So that's called nystagmus. And then when he started moving around more, we noticed him just very clumsy, a lot of accidents, and it turned out that he doesn't have good vision. So his optic nerve developed and stopped functioning. So he sees about 20/400 with his glasses on. So he sees everything very blurry. He also had seizures then as a child. As 15 months old, he started to have seizures. So we were just super nervous and worried for him. And we made trips to the hospital about 100 times, really, and had brain MRIs, all kind of tests. And we never really found much. So we just have really accepted and loved Jude for who he is. He's in a regular classroom, and he's part of our world, and we love him to death. And I always thought I wanted three kids, so God bless my husband. I said, why don't we adopt a third kid? So this was between the cancer and it coming back, so the timing was actually good. And so we applied to be foster parents through the Department of Human Services here in Iowa, and we were hopeful to foster and adopt if reunification wasn't likely. And we got very lucky. Our first placement was a six-month-old baby, and she ended up needing a permanent home, of which we were glad to provide. So that's our youngest, who is Anna Joy. So aww. That is, yeah, it's kind of a crazy story. So because of some of those downfalls, what we really try to do is find ways to give back. So one thing we did is we saw on TV on the Today Show a episode about Harper's Playground in Portland, Oregon, and it was a playground that's built for all kids of all abilities. So it's not a special needs park. They just built using landscape and different boulders and things that make it accessible for people who happen to have mobility issues or sight issues or whatever. But the whole thing is a big, fun, safe playground, and it has like a zip line and a water feature. And I thought, we need that here in our community, because taking Jude to the park was always a nightmare. Like, I just didn't want him to run off. I didn't want him to climb to the top of the equipment and just walk off the edge of it. And I didn't want him to be far away from me and have a seizure and what would happen. And so I just never took him to the park. So I met up with my friend Amanda, and we said, let's do this. She had a nonprofit organization. We both work full time. She has a special needs child and a typical child as well. And it took us 4 years, but we raised $1 million. And then last fall on Labor Day, we got to open. It's called Place to Play Park, and it's in Cedar Falls, Iowa. And it's the most fun park. Like, they're usually not during COVID times, obviously, but there are generally hundreds of people that are going to it every single day because it's so fun. So that was something we felt we could give back. Yeah. I also joined a board called Inclusion Connection, and we help adults with disabilities find meaningful work and get paid meaningful wages and contribute to the society. So we have about an 80% placement rate, which for people with disabilities, there's usually about an 80% unemployment rate. So we have been very successful in helping people locally find job opportunities and coach and provide accommodations to help them be in the real world, as we always say. Then on the cancer front, we've done a couple of things there too. So I joined a local board called Can Do Cancer, and we help women get through chemotherapy. Well, all people, but mostly women. What we do is we provide free meals on the days of their chemotherapy, so they don't have to worry about cooking. And we provide free housekeeping for 4 months for professional service. And we give them a patient partner, so a mentor who has gone through what they've gone through, to help hold their hand and let them know what to expect and be there for them emotionally and whatever other ways they need. So I've become a patient mentor as well. I've mentored about 6 women in my community to help get through breast cancer. And I feel like that's helping one at a time, and that's really important work. And I wanted to also go bigger. So I joined Beyond Pink, which is a local group that also does advocacy at a national level. So we recently had a lobby day, and we've been working to get this act passed called the Metastatic Breast Cancer Access to Care Act. And it's essentially an act that would help if you are under 65, get a stage 4 or a metastatic breast cancer diagnosis. It would waive the 2-year waiting period that's current to get Medicare for an insurance option. So if you get metastatic stage 4 breast cancer, the average length people live is about 3 years. So if you have to wait 2 years just to get insurance, your odds aren't good. So we had asked our legislators many times One legislator in particular is Joni Ernst here in Iowa, and we had asked her 15 times to sign on this, and 15 times we were told no. So we used our marketing skills, and I came up with some videos, a couple featuring testimonials of real women who are in that situation. And then my husband and I made a video that showed all of the hundreds of other legislators who had signed onto this bill. And at the end, we're like, Joni Ernst, where's your name? We're dying to know. And we played the video for her staff, who played it for her. And I'm happy to report the next day she signed the bill. So that felt
so
really
cool.
Awesome, right?
Yeah.
So that could really, I feel like the advocacy work can have a far broader reach to really change lives and help.
Yeah.
So yeah, we try to use what we've learned through, you know, cancer and having a child with special needs or whatever situation arises, and try to pay it forward, try to help the next one so it's a little easier.
I love that. I have to ask you this too, Sarah. When she said no 15 times, why did you even go back the 16th time?
You know, there's a wonderful mentor I have here locally. Her name is Christine Carpenter. She's known at a national level that she is an excellent, she's volunteer. She is not paid, but she's a lobbyist. And she is full of persistence and grit. And she will keep asking until she says, gets that yes. And sometimes it takes that 16th time, right? I mean, her election's coming up. Of course, it was this probably the perfect timing. But yeah, we don't give up. We have to just keep trying because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah. And going back to Harper's Playground for a minute, I remember when we were talking the other day, and you said, oh, we need that here. And you went to the city, and they're like, sure. And then they said, hey, raise $1 million. How did you feel then?
Right. With all the things that we've come, I'm kind of glad I didn't know what we were getting into with any of it as we got into it. I probably would have been a lot more worried. I just thought, let's do this. I had no idea what it would cost. So I just, you know, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. So we met with the city parks folks. They said, sure, if you raise this money, we're glad to have it. We'll even give you the land and we'll build the bathroom. So they had some investment in it. Then I went to a landscape architect because Cody out in, this was another fun story. So I really wanted to build a playground like Harper's Playground because it looked so different than the typical heavy equipment playground. So I thought, I need to get a hold of that guy off the Today Show. His name is Cody Goldberg. And I'm like, I need to get a hold of him. So what I did is I Facebook requested him. I found his phone number. I found his email. And I just kept calling and leaving messages. And I'll tell you what, the next day he called me back. He said, I got to tell you, Sarah, I get about 100 calls a day now after that Today Show ran. And I only call one back a day. And I called you back because you sounded like somebody that could get this done. So I'm going to tell you how to do it. And he gave me all kinds of advice. He said, have it be at a city park, not a school park, because then you have better access. Use real materials, real boulders. Have a sand and water equipment. The city will hate it because it's kind of a maintenance nightmare, but it's the holy grail of kids' play equipment. Have a zip line, use special turf so that the whole place is accessible for wheelchairs. He said, have your own nonprofit organization that you can keep the money so that you have more control and it doesn't, you know, get put into a different project. So he gave me all this advice and he really helped us. So I went to the landscape architect because I knew to go to them and not the playground equipment company. And they said, they've never built one either, but they were willing to figure it out. So they went and toured a bunch and did a lot of research and they came and said, well, we're going to need $1 million. And we were like, whoa. So at first we thought we could do it in a phased approach, like raise 600 and 400. And then about halfway into the project, the architect was like, no, actually the surfacing is really important and we can't do that in a phased approach. So we really just need all $1 million up front. So we started doing bake sales, can drives, every little thing. We ended up hiring a grant writer who helped us secure some much larger grants. One was $250,000. So took every small and every large gift to get it done. And it was really remarkable. A couple of cool stories. One was, we got to the end of a year, and if we didn't actually raise $80,000 by the end of the year, there were some grants that we'd been awarded that we were going to actually lose. So my husband made a video that shows the need for the park. It actually shows somebody in a wheelchair or trying to use a typical park, and it's not very successful. And then we show what we want to build, right? We made it's like 5-minute video. And he did it on his spare time while I was going through chemo, and he paid a guy $200 to shoot the footage.
And oh, man.
a cool story with that is he ended up doing the video and he really wanted to use this special music. It's from the movie The Lorax. And so he emailed the guy in the middle of the night, like, hey, I'm building this park. My son has special needs. I want to use your music in this video. The next day, he replied all, copied his legal team and said, use my music. You have full rights.
No
way. And my
way.
Husband was... He was in tears. He was like, awesome, right? Well, we played this video for an anonymous donor we had heard about that might be interested in our project and said essentially we needed $80,000 by the end of the year. Would he consider meeting with us, watch this video in advance? And he emailed back less than 5 minutes later and said, come pick up your check for $80,000. I had a sister growing up with a disability. Wow. I didn't know about your project, but I'm behind it 100%. And in fact, if you need more, come back and ask me.
Oh, we unreal.
Like, oh, unreal, unreal, unreal. Another cool story, I have a family member who is very well off financially. And at the end, we were 100,000 short from reaching the million. And we had one grant that was going to give us 10,000 a year for 10 years. But the city couldn't count that as money in our pocket. So we actually needed it up front. So I got my guts up and I asked this family member if they would loan us $100,000 up front, we would pay them back over 10 years, 0% interest. How does that sound? And this person laughed and said she'd have to, you know, talk to her attorney or whatever. And a few months later, we were at a family reunion and she pulled Chris, that's my husband, and me aside and said, I thought a lot about this and I'm just going to give you the $100,000. And
no way.
And on top, yeah. And on top of that, I don't want my name on the project. I want you to name a piece of equipment after your son, Jude. So there got to be a Jude's Jungle from that donor. And then the previous 80,000 donor, we have a Bose Bungalow. So the two little boys that inspired the park each got a piece of equipment named after
them.
That
is so cool.
Yeah, it was so cool. And, you know, I didn't lose a lot of sleep over it. Amanda apparently said she did lose sleep over trying to raise this money. I just figured we'd get there eventually. But it became really important to me when I met this little boy, Jonah. And Jonah has spina bifida. He uses a wheelchair. He's adopted from China. His parents are local friends of ours. And I met him the first time. And he's like, I cannot wait to go down that roller slide. I want to be the first one down the slide. And we're like, Jonah, you will be the first one down the slide, right? Well, we see him a month later and he's like, hey ladies, where's my slide?
Where's my slide?
Oh, game on. We have to get this built for Jonah now. We got kids that are counting on us. So it was really cool to see though the community come around and support it. You know, we did 100 women who care and we got a bump of 12,000. And then we had all these women and people in our community who knew about the project. So all of a sudden kids would be giving up their birthday money and putting a couple hundred bucks to the park. Bo's classmates made a PowerPoint to his parents and said, we want to get involved. So they started making bracelets and doing pumpkin sales. And they ended up raising over $10,000, essentially like $1 at a time. So
this
is really cool to see the community support it. And then you'll include the link, but there's an opening day video. It's pretty hard to watch without getting a little teary to see all these kids come and tearing in with their walkers and wheelchairs and all kinds of stuff.
And
they're all playing, they're all having fun, right?
That is amazing. And Sarah, there's so many things that are amazing in that how you and your friend Amanda got everyone involved. It's almost like you created a vision and a purpose that people could really get behind. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I think I heard you say in there that I didn't know as part of the story, did you say you were doing that while you were going through chemo?
Yeah, it was right in the middle of it. We're trying to raise this money. And God bless Amanda, because there was like a year I couldn't really help much. And she picked up the ball and ran. And then I tell you, it took about a year to get through all of the medical treatments. And I said, put me back in, coach. I'm ready to go. So we finished the project together. But yeah, that was not easy for sure. And my husband really stepped up. He took my place. He helped. He did whatever he could to keep it going. So, yeah.
Now, when you were going through chemo, I think you told me that, well, I know you did. You were working full time, even while you were going through chemo.
I worked full time. I did the only days I took off work were literally the days I had infusions. So I'm extremely competitive. My friend Tracy is now writing a book about how you can use your strengths, like strength finders, to get through like a cancer diagnosis. So for me, I'm all about action, right? So I needed to like make a plan, find who's going to watch my kids, but how is this all going to work, logistics. And then I'm super competitive. So I'm like, cancer is not getting any of my PTO. I'm still going on my vacation to Minnesota. I'm still going on my trip to Jamaica. I don't care if you have to prop me up in my desk, Weekend at Bernie style. I am not giving up my vacation day. So I have a very supportive work environment, which helps a lot and made some accommodations for me. But even the days I felt the roughest, I thought, just get through it and just get there and do it. And so I don't think that's a very typical way to go through cancer treatment.
No, but you did.
Definitely. We did. We got through it. I have said for a full year, I didn't go to the grocery store. I didn't do a load of laundry. I didn't do a meal. I worked and I came home and slept. That's all I could focus on. I couldn't run my kids' errands. I was very good about asking for help. We had people who would give our kids rides to piano lessons, go on play dates, you know, and some of my best friends came out of this, you know, the ones who, instead of stepping away during that period, really stepped up. So two in particular, one after one of my double mastectomy, and I was in so much pain. I woke up one morning and I could hear my kids running and playing. And I'm like, that's great. And I need to rest. So I called my friend and I'm like, hey, I know you said you'd be willing to help. Would you take the kids? And she's like, yes. When do you want us to come get them? I'm like, now.
As soon as you can.
10 minutes later, your husband pulled up in his car and off they went. So that was amazing. And then we had another couple of friends that we were, you know, sort of friends with, but all of a sudden this happened with cancer and they showed up literally to our house almost every day to hang out, see how we're doing, check in. And those were the two women I called the day I knew I needed to shave my hair off. I knew it was falling out. I knew it was coming. And I just called both of them and said, what are you doing? It was like Sunday afternoon. And they're like, nothing. And I'm like, would you come over and help me shave my head? And I found out later, my friend was with her husband and she started to cry at home. And she said, you know, I want to get this out of the way because I got to be strong for Sarah. So we didn't cry, but we shaved it off. And everybody kind of handles that differently too. I have a friend that threw a big party at the mall and shaved her hair off and had a professional photographer, right?
Like, oh my goodness.
I wanted a little private. So yeah, there's many ways to kind of deal with it. You know, losing my hair was really hard. And I think waiting to lose my hair was harder than when I finally just did it and it was
just
over.
Did it.
We just could just move on. So yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
It helped us get some very good lifelong friends.
Yeah. You know, Sarah, you said something in there, and I think I heard this also when you're talking about Harper's Playground, you got really good at asking for help. And I think that's not always easy. So where does that come from?
Right. I think I'm a big believer of like love languages, like how do you express or need to hear appreciation? And for me, mine is acts of service. So people who do things for me, like, makes me very happy. I'm very fortunate my husband is a doer. He's like, makes me, you know, I came up with this idea to write a blog and not 5 minutes later, my husband had one all set up ready for me to go, you know, and then I come up with these ideas to raise money and build it. And then he builds me a website because so it gives it a brand and a story, right? Place to Play Park came straight from that. We need to raise money. He made a video for me. So, I mean, I think I'm good at asking because I'm good at getting the right people involved who will do a great job and that I know will do better than I could have ever done. So extending a lot of trust and having that circle and knowing that together we're going to accomplish so much more than any of us individually can do. So.
Yeah. Do I hear in there that is the, you know, not needing to control?
Right. I think I'm pretty much saying big picture. Like my eyes always on the prize of getting it done. And I don't necessarily care how we get there or even when we get there, just as long as we get there. I'm very persistent, got a lot of grit. I think, you know, some of it's shaped from like, you know, losing my mom at a young age. I think you just kind of have to learn to step up and take care of yourself in a little different way. I still have a wonderful father and we grew much closer. So there are things that came out of it that were positive, but I think that part of my personality definitely started there.
I can imagine. I know when we talked earlier, you said, you were talking about Chris and you said, most amazing husband. And then you said, when we decide to be in, we are all in.
Yes, we don't do a lot of things. We are very picky about the causes we get involved with and where we choose to spend our time. I think if you are volunteering or doing something above work, it should give you energy and make you excited. If you are doing that and you're feeling drained and you don't want to be participating, it's probably a sign you should switch or quit. So when we do something, we do it 110%. Another fun example is we got involved with the Pete Buttigieg presidential campaign. So he came through Iowa at the state fair, and then shortly after we heard him speak in person and he moved us both. We had voted for President Barack Obama, and he reminded us so much of President Obama that we said, we're all in. So this is kind of how it goes, right? Like, I reached out to someone on the campaign and like, what do you need? And he's like, well, we need money, we need volunteers, and we need houses for people for our workers to stay in. I was like, well, we have a great house, and in the basement is a full kitchen. It's a perfect setup. It wouldn't inconvenience us at all. So I tell my husband, I'm like, hey, guess what? They need housing. So I told him, yeah. And he's like, well, that's cool. He's like, when are they coming? I'm like, tomorrow. Duh.
At least it wasn't tonight.
Right? And then it ended up that two showed up and they both needed a place to stay. So I'm like, if you don't get a better offer, you're welcome to also stay in the basement. So we had two Pete Buttigieg workers in our house from, about Halloween until the caucuses in February. So about November, December, January, about 3 or 4 months. And it was life-changing because it was so inspirational to see these young people work so passionately and hard for a candidate they believed in. And they'd come home every night and we'd sit and visit with them and encourage them. And they became like family to us. Like, I would do anything for the people that we met in that campaign. So one of them, his name is Amir Jones. He was a worker with them, and he calls me his Iowa mom. He has several Iowa moms. He would be at our house more than we were at our house at that time. So, and we were literally like Grand Central Station for many days, organizing packets and people and door knockers. And I mean, it's so 180 degrees from where we are now with not allowing anyone nearby. But at the time we were pot committed. So I am happy to say he did officially win the Iowa caucus, and hopefully the Corkery's had something to do with that.
Something.
I wish it had gone a little bit different, but we know big things are in for Mayor Pete in the future. So yeah.
That's just amazing. And you said something there, if you're going to volunteer, if you're going to be part of something, it should give you energy. And the other day when we were talking, you said something like, know what to say no to.
Right. Sometimes you have to say no. So a quick story was a nonprofit organization asked me to speak at their gala having to do with my cancer experience. And I said I would. So I'm in marketing. So I wrote this great speech, Sarah Corkery and the Horrible, Terrible, No Good, Very Bad Day. And it was kind of this joke about all these things that have gone wrong and how I've turned them around into like great things that have been in our lives. I sent it, and they asked me for it in advance. I sent it to them, and they're like, no, that's not what we really want. We really want you to talk about how great we are. And I said, oh, well, sorry, I'm not going to do your speech. That's not what I do. Or, you know, I'm really involved with inclusion work, and I'm very passionate that that means we make accommodations so everyone can be together, that it's not a segregated space for other people to go, right? And so I was on a committee, same thing happened. They said, let's define inclusion. And I just like that. Everybody's together. We've made accommodations. And I'll tell you, living with someone with a disability, when someone made accommodations for you, it feels like Christmas morning. Like, we showed up to a ballpark once, and it was like, front row is for all the kids with disabilities, and here's the seating, and here's how we're going to accommodate them. And they'll each have a runner, and typical kids will be involved with non-typical kids. And so if you can be accommodating, it works. It's when it's an afterthought, it's not even thought of at all, when it doesn't work, when he's literally going to trip and fall, when he's going to have accidents, when it's not going to be functional for him. So this other person on the committee said, no, I really think inclusion means we create this separate segregated place where people with disabilities want to be because they want to be together. And I said, oh, I got to pause. That doesn't fit well with me. So if that's the direction this is going, you can go. But I'm not about creating a segregated experience. So luckily the organizer said, no, that's not the direction we're going. But, you know, just kind of having your moral compass and where you feel strongly about something so that you can guide you and be like, you know, no. Or I was, before my cancer diagnosis, on 5 different boards of directors, and I only really cared about 2. The others I was just doing to like be a good person and build my resume, right? So when I got my cancer diagnosis the second time, I just quit them all. I just said, you know, this is happening. All my energy needs to go towards my family and my work right now. And it was a great excuse to get off them. And those were the ones that I didn't look forward to going and didn't give me energy. So now mm-hmm. I stay focused in those areas. Yep.
That's amazing. There's so much power in that when you know what gives you energy. When you guys launched the park, that was in the middle of a huge project that you had going on at work that I yes. happened to know about. It was a right. nightmare project. So to have the energy that you do, yeah. you have to know what gives me energy and what takes it away. You know,
right. At our work, we did a big, it's called a core conversion. So I work at a financial institution and we hadn't upgraded in over 30 years. So we spent 18 months, 100 people literally worked on this project and I was in charge of the marketing and communication around it. So we knew it was going to be Labor Day weekend. That had been planned a year and a half in advance. And then lo and behold, the park gets done and that's the weekend they want to do it. And I was like, well, why not? We're just going to do it all Labor Day weekend. So one cool story with that was, you know, I knew it was going to be a good park. And that morning we did have like 500 people show up, which was amazing. And I thought, mm-hmm. I'll run into work because we're doing the conversion, right? And I'll do that. And then I'll come back later and I'll pick up the cans or I'll just pick up when it's empty and there's no one there. So I did that, went to work, came back, and I counted. There was 200 people there. Every day I started to drive by and I would count the license plates and I'd count the cars and there was always 200 to 300 people there at all times. And Cody at Harper's Playground said, when you build a better play experience that happens to accommodate kids with disability, it creates a better play experience for all. And he has done some research. He believes for every one kid that is out playing at a regular playground equipment heavy playground, there are 100 kids playing at places like Place to Play Park that are built a little differently. So we would love to see one in every community for many reasons, but I love to see all those kids running around out there. They're not looking at their phones. They're not, you know, on behind yeah. the screen. They're literally running around and playing and having fun. So yeah,
that is amazing.
That was really cool. But yeah, it was an interesting timing, right?
Yeah. And because I remember when you were telling me about the park, I was like, I want to go play there. That sounds like so much fun.
and you know what? The whole thing has no, like, there's no weight restrictions. The whole place is built for kids and adults and whoever wants to come play on it. So you are welcome. Please come next time you come to Iowa.
I certainly will. I'm going to hold you to that one. Now, Sarah, I have to ask because you do so much. How do you keep going in spite of all of it?
Yeah, someone asked me once, like, how are you such a brave mom for your child with disability? I'm like, well, there was no other option. You know, you get given these diagnoses, but there's no other option, right? You have to go through it and deal with it and do make it the best you can. So I think there's something in me that is very persistent, that's very not giving up, because that's not an option, right? We have to be successful. So
yeah.
I think some of that is part of you. And I think some of that's a choice, right? It's choosing your mm-hmm. attitude to go into it and who you surround yourself with. My husband would tell me all the time, we're going to get this done. This is what do you need to do? What do we need to do next to either get through cancer or build the park or what, you know, having a super supportive spouse and people that are there to help you. I mean, that's how you get through it. You don't get through it by yourself. No one does. Right.
Right. Right. And it also seems like you're so connected to the purpose of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. It's inspiring.
I thought this was interesting. I had known about this woman in our community. Her name is Jean Trainer, and she was the president of this large financial company. And she also was kind of well known for her child, a grown son, has disabilities. And I didn't know her personally, but I kind of knew of her. And one time I worked at an ad agency and we ran an ad about a health system and we had an error in our disclosure in talking about people with disabilities. And Jean just happened to notice it, read the paper, and she emailed the guy I worked with and he forwarded the email to me to get the ad updated. But all of a sudden I was like, bingo, I've got Jean Trainer's email address. So I emailed her and just like, hi, I'm Sarah, my son, I'm telling you a little about, would you ever please go to lunch with me so I could just pick your brain? And she emailed right back and she's like, absolutely, let's go to lunch. And that started a friendship and a mentorship and helped me with my career. You know, really, she's changed our lives. And she kept advocating, like, because when Jude was newly diagnosed, I thought, okay, we got this. Now we're in the special needs club. Where are all the special needs things that we need to do? And she kept gently reminding me that, hey, Jude belongs in the real world. We don't need to create a special separate place for him. Like, let's figure out the accommodations to make him successful wherever he needs to be. So that just totally shaped and shifted everything for our family. So on a chance email, right?
That's right. That takes some gumption. Did you have any hesitation about reaching out to her?
No.
Of course you did.
I didn't. I just thought worst case, she won't answer or she'll say no. I mean, that's like the worst case. And best case, we go to lunch and I learn something. So I think things, you know, that happen, you make the most of it. So it's like all along I've said, I'm not like Sarah's awesome, all this stuff has happened to us and we've just responded to a lot of things. And we've been very fortunate that what we've gone through hasn't bankrupted us, hasn't, you know, resulted in anybody dying. And we need to be grateful. And so paying it forward as much as we can. We see somebody going through something. Oh, another example. So when I was going through chemo, there's all these practical things that help you get through it. So like a warm, soft blanket, usually black because in case it gets spilled on. I sucked on Jolly Ranchers or some kind of candy because it tastes really funny when you're literally getting chemo in your mouth.
Okay.
Sometimes metal and glass or metal and plastic tastes funny, literally. So like a glass water bottle is helpful. There's these bands you wear on your wrist that's usually for traveling on a cruise, but that seems to help with nausea for people going through chemo.
Yeah.
There's a special gum you can choose. There's a special toothpaste. So when a friend got diagnosed with cancer later, I put together this bag and I put all the things in it. I'm like, this is what you need to take with you. And my husband's like, that's brilliant. We need to do that for more people. So of course, in Chris Corkery style, he builds a website called chemotoast.com. And for, I think it's $75, you can order one and we'll put it together for you and we'll ship it anywhere. So anybody going through cancer treatment gets the chemo tote in a bag. And it was pretty simple to begin with. And now we found a local woman who's willing to quilt and make them look even cooler. And so, yeah. So it's always the thing, like, you know, you hear somebody's going through something difficult and you always think, what can I do? And a lot of times there's not a lot, but this is something you can do. Like, you can just order this bag. We are making no money off it. It's just to try and get these into people's hands that want them. And if anything, I feel like I've seen people, they've got it, feels like they're going to war and they've got what they need and they're prepared. And for some people, depending on their strengths, that's really important. So
yeah,
I thought that was cool to work on that too. So Chris is amazing.
Wow. Yeah. Well, it sounds like you guys just, you see a need and it's like, okay, what can we do? What can we do?
Right.
And that's awesome.
Right. Yeah. And we're marketing people. So it's generally,
that's right.
What we know how to do. He's a graphic designer and art director, so he can do websites and videos and great things. And I'm in marketing, so I can help with some ideas and some strategies. But yeah, together we can get a lot done.
Oh my goodness. And I read your blog and there was that one post, I think it was the one you were going to build your presentation around. What was it?
Right. And Sarah and the whole no good, horrible, very bad day, right?
Yeah. But I loved that because you said this sucked or whatever that it happened, and then you turned it around with, but if that hadn't happened, then this couldn't have happened.
Right.
Can you just give us a couple of examples from that?
Yeah. So, you know, one thing, I was married previously to my high school sweetheart. I think I wrote in there, he was a super nice guy and really cute. And so that made sense, right? Well, guess what? We were totally not aligned about money or politics or anything. Let's just say I'm a pretty advocate for Democrats. So that didn't work out. And it felt terrible at 20 something years old to be divorced. And you think, what is your life going to happen now? Who's going to want to date me? And how am I going to date? And I have a mortgage and a dog. And, and you know, there was Chris, and he came into my life and a great friend just at first, someone who was willing to go to work things with me and kind of help me through it. And it was funny because then I was like, well, maybe I should date around a few more people. And he's like, that's cool. I just have this one rule that if, you know, you date someone else and you don't date me, then I don't come back. Like, it's done.
Oh, and
wow. I was like, what? So like, all right, well, okay. So then I was like, sure, go ahead and let's just keep dating. So anyway, had I not gotten divorced, I wouldn't have met Chris and I would have married Chris. And I know I wouldn't have. I would have been always looking for the ex type of person that I had in high school. And until I did that, I would have never realized this other type of person was what I totally needed. And he's exactly right for me. And I know that for sure. So if that hadn't happened, so things like, you know, losing my mom, that stunk that she died. And yet I have an amazing relationship with my father now, probably closer than it would ever be, and his spouse. Mm-hmm. And it's wonderful. The day I graduated college, my dad told us he was gay, and my mom had been gone a long time, and it was a total surprise. Wow. If that hadn't happened, I don't think I would be as much of an advocate for gay rights. Outside my house mm-hmm. right now, we've got a gay pride flag waving. So, I mean, we just want to be allies and supporters. And if I hadn't had that experience, I don't know if I would have shaped me maybe quite the way. I truly believe that's how people are made, some people, and that's just totally fine. It's all about who we love, right? So, and if I hadn't gone through cancer, I mean, it stunk. But helping with this advocacy work, hopefully getting big things changed so that it's easier for people that have it worse off, just may not have happened. I may not have made time for it because I was mm-hmm. involved with the same group years before I was that closely involved, and it's a little different once I'm more connected to it on a personal level.
Right, right. You've been there. You've walked there. You know what you're saying there, Sarah, I was doing an interview last week, 2 weeks ago, and I was talking to someone and he was quoting someone else when he said, everything belongs. And mm-hmm. sometimes on our journey, when it's happening, you're like, what? What is this going on? But then as you go through it, it's like, oh, okay, I see how it belongs. And I see how it's maybe changed me or, you know, moved me forward somehow.
Yeah. You know, a book I read when I was going through some of this is When Bad Things Happen to Good People. It's an older book, but it's really good. And it just literally ticks off why you didn't cause this. You didn't do something to make this happen. You know, it's cancer. Some is lifestyle, but a lot is genetics and a lot is dumb luck. A cell goes spinning out of control. So I think that helped put my mind at ease that no matter what came in our life, it wasn't because we were good or bad people. Some stuff just happens. Mm-hmm. So that gives me faith. It gives me hope. It gives me a sense of comfort that, hey, I don't have that much power, right? Like stuff just happens and we just got to deal with it.
Yeah. That's a great mindset to have, you know? Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this, because you've done so much nonprofit and advocacy work. If someone is listening and they're like, how do we make something happen? You know, whatever that might be, what advice would you have for them?
Yeah, I would contact someone else who's done it, like I did with Cody, just literally try to get in touch with somebody that's done exactly what you've done. And likely they will give you time and give you guidance on how to do it yourself. You know your strengths. Like I knew we're good marketers. My husband's good at building things like that. So how can we use tools like that to help us get forward? And also know our gaps, right? What I'm not good at. So on our fundraising, I was good about looking for the big dollars and helping with the big projects. Amanda was really good at more. She did that too, but she also had a passion for the bake sales and the getting involved with the kids and stuff, which I didn't necessarily, I would help her if I needed to, but she definitely led the charge on those. So, but I say this park wouldn't have got built if Amanda and I had tried to either of us do it ourselves. I don't feel like it would have gotten built. We needed the strengths and diversity of the two of us to get it done. Mm-hmm. So knowing what you've got, but knowing what you maybe don't have and finding someone else who's similarly passionate, right? Like Amanda's happens to have a child that this also benefited. And we knew that together we could get it done. So I would, and reach out to me. I mean, gosh, I'm happy to have a conversation with anybody who is, especially if you are involved with anything with inclusion or disability rights or breast cancer. I mean, those seem to be my areas, but anything really, because I think it's all about just getting a plan and doing one step at a time. What can I do today that's going to help us get this done? And can I squeeze in a couple things over my lunch or maybe after dinner? Can I make a couple calls or send a couple emails, or who do I need to meet with and who in this community needs to know about this project? So making sure people are on board and hear about it.
Yeah. And sometimes it is just that one thing that I do today, you know, just one thing or two, whatever it is, but just something every day. So with that, Sarah, and of course I'll put on the links in the show notes, but is there a best way for people to contact you?
Yeah. You can just, I'm on Facebook under Sarah Corkery. That would be one way. The other is my phone, which I'm happy to give out. So do you want me to just say it, or are you going to put it on the link?
We can do both if you want.
Okay. Yeah.
Whatever you want.
Sure. We can include it both. But my phone number is 319-239-3800. Yeah. I'm happy to take a text or a call from anybody.
Wow. That's very generous of you. Again, paying it forward.
Yeah. Right.
Very cool. Well, Sarah, this has been really amazing. Like, and I always just, when I talk to you, I'm like, just so inspired. That's who you are. Is there anything, any parting words of wisdom for someone, you know, that is either going through something or wants to start something good? Any parting words?
Mm-hmm. Ask for help. Don't be afraid to ask for help. And that getting through cancer, we made a meal train. We had any help anybody wanted to give me, I said yes. And I do give advice to people that want to help people with cancer or any diagnosis that's challenging, is don't ask what can I do for you, because that puts the burden back on them. Like, just say, I'm going to drop by a meal. What's your favorite restaurant? I'm going to pick up a gift card. Where do you want it from? I'm going to do this. Just give me some guidance on making it work for you. Or I'd really want to do a play date with your kids. Are they free this Saturday? I mean, being that specific and that thoughtful, that helps. Another piece of advice that I love, I'll give the link too, but there's this idea that there's circles, right? And the person going through whatever they're going through is in the circle. That person is allowed to say anything they want. They can talk about how this sucks. They can talk about how whatever, that they're mad. They can talk about anything. And then you go, the next circle out is like their close family, right? So now you only can dump outward. So I can dump out to my next circle, but then the next circle is like family and friends, right? So they can dump out, they can't dump in. So what happens is that helps. So people don't say to you like, oh my God, I can't believe you're going through this. This is so hard for me. And my aunt had this and she died. And you know, all this stuff that's like not helpful.
That's
like,
right,
you
not
can
helpful.
Dump it out. But the person in the middle, you get to have whatever said that you need to say to get through to the next day. So that I think is probably my biggest advice, but just don't be afraid. Like, don't think something is too big that you can't do it. It's possible. And don't wait for someone else to do it, because it might not get done. So if you see something and you want to fill a need, just get to work to fill it. Like, don't wait if you can.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And I love the circle thing. Dump outwards. That's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah, you can do that all day long. Go that direction. Don't go the other direction.
Dump out. Outward.
And it will help you with any situation with somebody dealing with. You know, my cousin or my uncle died of brain cancer, and she said that was so helpful for her to share that with people as they were going through that, because it was very true. Like, they needed their space, but not having other people piling onto them.
That's right. And people don't do that out of a bad space. I don't think. Hopefully
and
not.
And I've it's done just, it before. No, know. Everybody, you go to how does this relate to me, and how does this, you know, that's just our natural inclination. So they're not, no one's doing it to be mean or, you know, to try to cause stress. It just helps you stay in a good mindset that avoids that if you can. And I know I've done it before, so it's easier said than done. So we just have to offer a lot of grace and extend grace and try to all get through it.
Yep. Yeah, that is a great visual though. Sarah, once again, thank you so much for joining.
Yeah,
and I know once again, welcome. It's like we're doing this interview and you're leaving on vacation soon. And I'm so appreciative of you making the time to come on.
Well, I think it's funny. My coworker, Mark, who you emailed and said, hey, do you know anybody who's like overcome something or gotten through something or used it? And Mark called me and he goes, hey, Bobby asked me if I know anybody that, you know, has gotten through anything. And he's like, the first person I thought of was you. And I go, well, that's funny, because the first person I thought of was me too. So yeah, no, it's perfect
so
way to help. I'm glad to be a part of this. I can't wait to hear it and hear all the other stories I'm sure you're going to be sharing. So thank you, Bobby.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
I so hope that you enjoyed that conversation. Myself, I found myself fighting back tears so many times, and not because I was sad, but because I was just so moved and so inspired. When I listened to it in order to extract my takeaways, my first thought was, skip the takeaways, just listen to it again. But here are some nuggets that I loved. There are different ways to make a difference. Sometimes you can make a difference one-on-one, and sometimes you can make a difference by reaching many. It doesn't matter which one you pick, because both are needed. Even if someone tells you no 15 times, don't be afraid to ask the 16th time, because they might just change their answer. You cannot be afraid to reach out and ask for what you need. Know what to say no to. If it doesn't give you energy, it's probably a sign that you should move on. I think this is a big one for a lot of us. We have to be intentional with what we say no to so that we can also be intentional with what we say yes to. Her formula for persistence: surround yourself with people who support you. Ask yourself, is there really another option? Do I really want to quit? And then choose your attitude towards what is happening. That was her formula for persistence. If you are trying to organize a nonprofit or some sort of effort, here are her four keys. 1, reach out to someone else who has already done what you're trying to do and learn from them. 2, know your strengths. What are you good at? What gives you energy? What can you contribute? What do you want to contribute? 3, know what your gaps are and find someone who shares your passion who can fill those gaps. That is great advice. And 4, do it one step at a time. Ask yourself, what is one thing that I can do today? And then do that. Again, these were just some of the nuggets. I would love to hear your comments about what resonated most for you. If you found this podcast helpful, I hope that you'll consider subscribing as well as sharing it and maybe even leaving us a 5-star review below. This has been the Unyielded Podcast, and I believe that thriving is not a destination. It's not about achievement. It's all about engagement and how do we become our very best selves. I believe that each of us, we were created for a purpose, because the world needs the unique gifts, strengths, and talents that each of us can bring. My life's work is to change the world for the better, one life at a time. I hope that you'll help me do that by sharing the word.